This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Happy Saturday afternoon. Hope you're enjoying a fantastic fall weekend. We only have two more baseball games left in the 2025 regular season for the White Sox as they are in the nation's capital taking on the Washington Nationals today and tomorrow. First pitch scheduled for 3:05 today. We shall see if that is actually something we can follow through with, because there is some rain in the forecast in Washington, so we are on high alert weather watch today. But never fear, we're going to be talking White Sox baseball with you here for the next couple of hours. The pregame coverage will start at 2:30, and then Len and DJ, if weather permits, will take over around 3 o'clock with, again, a 3:05 first pitch as the White Sox go for a second straight win against the Nationals. Logan Gilbert will be on the mound as an opener today. He'll be taking on Jake Irvin for the Nats. Before we get into a fantastic win for the White Sox last night, and I say fantastic because it very easily could have been an absolute disaster, in case you missed it, in case you were enjoying a Friday night and not necessarily locked into White Sox baseball, the Sox ran up an 8-1 lead on the Nationals, only to let that slip through their fingers. Ultimately, they found themselves trailing 9-8, and Colson Montgomery came through with a huge two-run jack in the ninth inning. At this point, I was trying to jog my memory if that was the most memorable win on the season for the White Sox, and it certainly feels like it very well could have been. That's something I'm going to go through next week, and I'll do a top five countdown on the most memorable wins for the White Sox in the 2025 season. That seems like a good year-end wrap-up topic for your final two-hour White Sox Weekly, which is next week. So maybe we'll do that. But it certainly felt like last night that was a very memorable game for the White Sox, and I think it might end up being the most memorable game for the White Sox when all is said and done. Before we get into that, though, I do want to mention, how about a congratulations, which is in order, to the White Sox AA affiliate, the Birmingham Barons, for winning their second consecutive Southern League championship. That's right. They won it earlier this week. It was the eighth in the franchise history as the team was able to close out the best of three series. They won 2-1 in what was an absolutely wild way of winning it, because the game was suspended in the fifth inning. So they had not completed a full five, so it wasn't an official game. And because of that, that was Wednesday night, and because of that, the Barons had to go to bed with a huge lead on the Montgomery Biscuits, only to have to come back and then come out the next day and finish it off. And it was a spectacular win, though, for the Barons as they closed it out. We're expecting to hear from the Barons manager, Guillermo Quiros, momentarily here. So can't wait to have that fun conversation with the Barons manager about winning a second title. Now, it's not Quiros's second title, because he actually was the manager of the Winston-Salem Dash last season, the White Sox high single-A affiliate. And Sergio Santos, who now manages the Charlotte Knights, was the manager of the Barons last year when they won their first title. So, but nevertheless, I have to imagine it was a very gratifying feeling for Quiros to go ahead and kind of come back and build on what Sergio Santos and the Barons were able to do last season. So, again, we're expecting to hear from Guillermo Quiros here in a minute or two. But before we hopefully bring on the Barons manager, let's celebrate their title and relive some of the championship moments from Game 3 that happened on Wednesday night and into Thursday afternoon.
One out with runners on first and second. The pitch. Swing and a line drive, base hit in the center. Bush up and throwing, coming around third base and scoring as the throw goes to second is Bergoglio. 0-2. Called strike three. Two ball, two strike pitch. Swung on and missed. 0-2. Swing and a miss. 1-2. Swing and a miss. Six strikeouts for Smith. Wilds 1-1. Sprinkle cracks one to left center, and it drops for a hit. It'll roll to the edge of the warning track. Two-run score. Here comes a third. It beats the relay. Sprinkle clears off the bases with a three-run double. On the corners. Swing, grounder up the middle. Sprinkle gets to it, flips to second, got the out there, and the double play. No way. What a play by Sprinkle. Davis brings the pitch. It's in the air to right field. Coming in, Nishida, and the Birmingham Barons go back to back in 2024 and 2025. Southern League champions once again. A marathon of a winner-take-all game three, and the Barons finally get to celebrate out on the mound. Jumping up and down, and they are back-to-back champions.
Birmingham Barons finish off the series win over the Montgomery Biscuits. Again, it was a 6-3 win as they earned their second straight Southern League championship and the eighth in franchise history over a two-day marathon game, as you heard right there, the Baron highlights. So pretty cool for the Barons to go ahead and go back-to-back. And it's interesting because you think about it, the minor league levels in professional baseball, certainly you want to win games, you want to win championships, but at the same time, there's no illusions that this is not about anything but development, right? That's really what the minor leagues are there for. You're trying to teach your younger players inside your organization who you hope one day will be able to help benefit your big league club. Now, obviously, the clubs have a vested interest in putting out a good product and wanting to win baseball games, but ultimately for the organization, you need your players to be developed at those levels. But what I will say is that, you know, even though sometimes people will say, okay, congratulations, you won some games at the minor league level, you should never apologize for winning games. I think there's a lot to be learned for younger players playing in competitive environments. And even in those playoff moments, in those championship games, when the moments feel bigger, because let's be honest, a lot of times at the minor league ballparks, you're not always playing in front of more times than not, you're not playing in front of a sold out crowd. I'd say 95% of the time, there's plenty of seats available in the minor league parks. So in those big moments, when you know there's more on the line, I think that absolutely is beneficial for your young players. So it was good to see the White Sox prospects at AA have some success for the second straight year. And I will pinpoint Hagen Smith in particular, who started the decisive game three. Now, he did not receive a decision because, as I mentioned, the rain did suspend the game on Wednesday night. But Hagen Smith had four innings. He struck out six. Now, this is Hagen Smith's issue that he's going to need to continue to work on to get better at in order to make his ascension to the major league level. But he did have five walks in this one. He allowed two hits and two runs. He actually was dominant in the first three innings, absolutely mowing through the Biscuits order, striking out numerous hitters. And I believe he only allowed one hit the first time through. The walks and the hits became a more of an issue later when he went into his fifth inning of work, when the Biscuits actually got to him. But the truth is, for Hagen Smith, AA, you know, I would have liked to have seen him, you know, a few less walks this season. But AA, I just think more times than not, the hitters that he's going to be facing at that level, they're just not going to be able to deal with his stuff. So for Hagen Smith, who will pitch in the Arizona Fall League, we learned that from Chris Getz about a month ago. And the plan was also for Noah Schultz, who began the season at Birmingham, to also pitch in the Arizona Fall League. However, we learned about a week ago that he's no longer going to do that as he gets he deals with a knee issue that was kind of messing with his landing. So Noah Schultz will no longer take part in the Arizona Fall League, but it's obviously most important that he get healthy and right so that when he's landing, he's not compensating in any way because Schultz and Smith, I think, are the two biggest pieces inside the White Sox organization long-term for this team to kind of take the next big step going forward. Coming into the season, Schultz and Hagen Smith were the top two left-handed pitching prospects in all of baseball. And I think they certainly both have the stuff where you can see why coming into the season that they were thought of as that. However, they both had a bit of a setback this year. It wasn't a perfect season, but I do like the fact that they've had some struggles at the minor league level because I will tell you, it's great for a player to just breeze through the minor leagues. However, when they do that and then they arrive at the major league level, never having failed in any way, any substantial way, it's always sometimes difficult for players because inevitably, when you get to the major leagues, you will struggle. It doesn't matter who you are. We're talking, you know, less than 1% of players who get to the majors and don't have some issues because the players are just too good. You're going to be, the absolute elite players, whether it's pitching or hitting, they're going to be able to make you pay at some point. So if you've never faced failure at the minor league level, sometimes it can be tricky, not because you're not talented enough, but because mentally, if you've never struggled at the minor league level, I've had conversations with Darren Jackson, Len Casper obviously has been around the game a long time. He knows that. So it's certainly a thing where it's sometimes good for the players to struggle at the minor league level because then they understand, oh, okay, I'm human, but the way I get through this is to find ways to trust in my talents and then come back. So it is good. I think it's actually going to be ultimately good for both Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith to have had some difficulty at the minor league levels because I think they're going to realize how they get through those struggles at a time. As I mentioned at the outset, pleased now to be joined by Guillermo Quiros, who is the manager of the Birmingham Barons, who have won back-to-back titles, but his first championship as the manager of the Barons. Guillermo, congratulations. Welcome to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Thanks so much for taking the time this afternoon.
Thanks, Jeff. Much appreciated. It's good to be here. You know, great feeling, great year. So, yeah, really excited about what we just accomplished.
No doubt about it. Guillermo, I have to ask because, listen, baseball has a long history. It's even longer if we add in, you know, all of professional baseball and the minor league levels. So I'm sure that it's probably happened at some point in the over 150 years of baseball history. But I have to imagine this had to be the first time that you, as either a player or a manager, had a championship game suspended in a do or die situation where you had to go home at night and then come back the next day to finish it off. Has this ever happened to you before?
No, man. This was unbelievable. You know, I started the game, you know, jumped ahead, scored 3 runs, and we scored 2 more. And then all of a sudden, you know, bottom of the 5th inning, you know, a couple of walks, base hit, and then, you know, just seeing those clouds come in, and I was like, oh, boy, here we go.
No doubt.
And then, you know, it felt like Godzilla came through the field, just watered everywhere. I was like, oh, my God, what just happened?
Yes.
So, you know, and anxiety kicks in, you know, we're waiting and waiting, and all of a sudden they go, hey, you know, we got to finish this one tomorrow. And then, you know, everybody starts running around, you know, changing flights. You know, it was unbelievable. But you know what? It was worth it, every single bit of it.
Guillermo, I'm so glad you said that because here's what I was thinking, and let me know if any of these thoughts popped into your head. First of all, okay, well, before we get there, did you get any sleep the night of when you knew you had to go out and manage a game the next afternoon?
Very little. You know, just thinking about scenarios.
Yes.
Just thinking about who are we going to have in the mound. Just thinking about Nishida litting in the sixth inning. I mean, it was unbelievable.
No, it's just absolutely crazy chaos. I didn't even think, you're right. Of course, the flights. Yeah, of course, it was supposed to be the last day of the season. So everybody had, oh my God. Listen, as a dad of a son who's played in some soccer tournaments where you've got a flight booked the next day, I can certainly I can certainly sympathize with anybody who had a flight booked and all of a sudden had to make a last second change. That's crazy. Then when you go out, but here's the thing. It had to be pretty cool to actually be able to go out the next day, the next afternoon, finish it off, as opposed to, it certainly would have been great to have won the night before. But if you guys had gotten in five and then you had to wait a little bit, it wouldn't have, I have to imagine it wouldn't have felt as just good and complete if you had to all of a sudden in the clubhouse been told, okay, game's official, you guys win. It's much better to like finish it off, right?
You know, either way, it was going to be a victory. Those guys were unreal. They kept themselves locked in. They had a goal in mind. What a grind! What a team, man! You know, lots of grinders. You know, they wanted it and they got it.
No doubt about it. Guillermo Quiros joining me. He's the manager of the champion Birmingham Barons. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. Guillermo, so I was talking about this a little bit earlier. The difficulty in, you know, as a manager, managing minor league players, when we know ultimately inside the organization, the goal is about development of the players. But at the same time, these are all very highly competitive athletes. So we know they want to go out there and win baseball games. How difficult was it for you this season managing the Barons with the goal that, hey, I want these players to get better, to reach the major leagues. But at the same time, hey, we're here to win. Was there at any point where you kind of like flip the switch when you know that you're going to the playoffs where you're like, okay, we're going to win this thing?
Yes, of course. And everything started day one of the season. You know, we created that mentality between, you know, the staff and the players that started with us, where, you know, we were going to start counting wins right away. And so, you know, we had this little whiteboard and we had messages, and throughout the whole year, you know, we just kept writing the numbers, the messages. So people that will come in and out talking about, you know, we have players move all year, you know, up and down. And so they can see and feel what we were about. And I think it worked out real well because everyone that came through, whether it was from Winston-Salem, Kannapolis, or sent down from Charlotte, you know, they were all invested. You know, they were right there with us. They knew what we were trying to accomplish. You know, they will come down and say, hey, you know, we're here to help out. We'll win. We want to win. We want this ring. And, you know, and they did accomplish it. So, you know, kudos to them. You know, as a manager, you can only do so much. But for them and the core that we had there, you know, starting with, you know, Nishida, Galani, Caden Connor, William Bergoya, Tanner McDougal when he came up, you know, Hagen Smith, you know, everybody talking about winning. I mean, it just sounded real nice to have that those type of personalities in my clubhouse.
No doubt about it. Guillermo Quiros joining me here on White Sox Weekly as we celebrate the Birmingham Barons championship, their second straight of the Southern League. Guillermo, I'm curious, you mentioned, you know, the players going up and down, and that obviously makes your job a little bit more difficult, which, hey, I'm sure you're not going to complain because you signed up for it. But at the same time, I had Sergio Santos on earlier this season, and I was joking around with him about the fact that whenever we, you know, the White Sox would call up one of these hot prospects, they would always send out the video, and it would be Sergio Santos breaking the news, you know, hey, congratulations, guess what, your lifelong dream, it's becoming a reality, which I, you know, I told Sergio, I'm like, that's got to be the coolest feeling as a manager to be able to do that, to tell a kid, hey, all this hard work that you've done and you've put into your life's goal, you've achieved it, nobody can ever take this away from you. And then I also, though, joked with Sergio, hey, did you get a little bit upset with Guillermo because he actually got to steal one when he's the one who got to tell Grant Taylor that, hey, you're going straight from AA to the majors. What was that like for you? Did Sergio text you at all, say, hey, you stole that one from me?
Hey, man, it was unreal. I think, you know, Sergio and myself, you know, we know how special it is. You know, we got the chance to accomplish that dream. And whether he did it or I did, I mean, it was just unbelievable. You know, we were sitting there, you know, me and our pitching coach, John Kubalik, just thinking about, you know, going through scenarios, how we're going to tell him, where are we going to set up our phone so he won't see it. You know, it was all these mixed emotions. And then when he got there, we started talking to him. You know, it was really nice to tell, you know, this young, good prospect, you know, Grant Taylor, to say, hey, and believe that, you know, he belongs there and he'll be there for a long time. You know, it was unreal. It's really fun. It's one of those moments that as a manager, as a coach, you know, that's your dream, you'll say, hey, you know, we accomplished this, you know, now, you know, it's up to him.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I completely I hear that, and I never get tired of hearing those or watching those, because it is so cool to see that moment when a person's dream does become a reality. Very cool. Guillermo Quiros joining me here for another moment on White Sox Weekly. Guillermo, I just want to ask you about a couple of players who White Sox fans are very interested in. Braden Montgomery, he made the jump to three different levels this season. You had him there, obviously, before the small foot fracture ended his season. What have you seen from Braden Montgomery that has you excited about his future?
Well, you know, you scan the whole field, and then you have this person playing in center field, and then the way he moves around, the way he goes about his business, you know, the way he throws the ball, the way he runs, you know, you right away you can tell, you know, that one's special. Well, that's the type of player that Braden Montgomery is. You know, you can actually tell that the athleticism is there, the drive, you know, everything you need on a prospect for a prospect to be successful, it's right there. You know, he's locked in every time. The mental game, you know, he's a big visualizer. And, yeah, he gets it done. So for us to have him there for a while before he got hurt, you know, that was fun to watch, man. It's unbelievable what he can do. And he can actually hit from both sides of the plate. So, you know, that's even better.
Talk to me, Guillermo, a little bit about William Bergerlo. You mentioned him, and he's somebody who had a great season, and then he just continued right into the playoffs. How critical was he for your success this season, and what do you think he has to still work on to improve and become a player that the White Sox can see at the major league level at some point?
I believe myself this kid's going to be special. You know, he was my shortstop pretty much every day, and he's a workhorse. So for him to be 20 years old and the level of maturity he's at right now, mm-hmm. it's unreal. He has a couple goals going into the offseason. His defense was great. You know, he made every single play for us, you know, very few errors, and most of them were, you know, on fields that were tough to play at. But you know what? It's part of it. You know what I mean? That's why, you know, we adjust and we work so we get better. In the offseason, his goal is to get a little stronger. You know, we need a little more impact out of his bat. You know, he's got those bat-to-ball skills. He can spread the ball around the field. But definitely, definitely get a little stronger, you know. He stayed healthy the whole season. You know, taking care of his legs is one of his most high goals he's going to have as well, because, you know, I don't think he's played this long of a season before in his life. So, you know, taking an accountability that he's also going to go to skill camps and an Arizona performance camp, you know, and then, you know, maybe get a little bit of rest and get back to it. So a couple goals for him. But, yeah, he's up for the task. You know, like I said, I think this kid's going to be special.
How about Tanner McDougal? You mentioned his name, and he's somebody who I think pitched so well that he's basically forced the White Sox hand, where he's going to have to be placed on the 40-man roster this upcoming offseason. What did you see from Tanner this season?
Oh, man, talking about electric stuff. You know, and you know, I had Tanner last year in Winston-Salem, and, you know, he struggled to locate his fastballs. You know, he was trying to throw that, you know, the spin and the strike zone, and he couldn't. This year was a completely different man. You know, the minute he walked into spring training, you know, and you felt that maturity out of him, you know, just talking and seeing him, you know, we started looking at each other like, who's this guy? Like, this is not what we had last year. And then all of a sudden, you know, he got on that mound and started, you know, 10-100, spinning the ball, you know, whether it was a curveball, a slider, right in the zone, and then strike two balls, you know, just putting people away. I was like, oh boy, here we go. And that's exactly what happened. You know, it's just fun to watch. I mean, you see them, him and Hagen throwing the ball on that mound during the games, you're going, how can they even, you know, they can't hit that. You know, it's that type of fastball, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Speaking of that type of fastball, okay, you led me there. You mentioned Hagen, and you also had Noah Schultz down there at the beginning of the season. Noah actually talked the other day. He was on a Zoom with the media where he was commenting on how he was watching all of you guys celebrate on the field, because obviously he has a connection. Schultz and Smith, everybody who's a White Sox fan knows their names at this point. Now, we can see the stuff is electric from both those guys, but at the same time, I'd have to imagine the season didn't go exactly as they were hoping, because there are high expectations for both players. What did you see from Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith this season, and are you still confident that they're going to be front-of-the-rotation type pitchers in the future?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. They got to go into the off season, you know, keep working on their deliveries, keep working on the release points, locating those fastballs, very important, and then working, you know, their sliders are there, you know, maybe adding a third pitch, a changeup or something like that. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's going to be fun to watch them in the future, man. Those guys working together on a same rotation, it's a plus, as we say, you know, talking baseball terms, you know, you have them out there, it's going to be a 1-2 punch, you know, and then maybe you can add Matt Dua to that mix as well. Oh my God. It's going to be fun, man.
Guillermo, last thing, I'm going to let you go. Last thing, I promise here. All right, so we, and you know, anybody who watched the Sox fans closely, I think we're all kind of aware of the prospects. But listen, you're in there day in and day out. Give me a name of a guy or two that maybe is under the radar that doesn't necessarily get the shine that all the top prospects get that we should be aware of as White Sox fans.
Well, if we go to a dynamic player, we got to go with Rico Nishida. Mm-hmm. Without him, I don't think we would have won this season. You know, he handled that clubhouse, the way he turned the flip his switch when playoffs started, you know, running, bunting, being that guy saying, hey, you know, we're going to win today, let's do it this way. And then you got to add Caden Connor as well. I mean, no questions. I mean, those are guys that are grinders. Sam Antonacci to that mix, oh my God. I mean, Sam Antonacci run the bases hard, high baseball IQ, defensive work is through the roof. I mean, those are just a few names.
Guillermo, love it. Thank you so much for taking a little bit of time this afternoon. Congratulations again. Great achievements doing what you did with the Birmingham Barons and following up what Sergio Santos was able to accomplish last season. So happy for you guys and the Barons and the White Sox organization. Great job this season.
Thanks again, Jeff. Much appreciated, man. It's a lot of fun stuff coming in the future for us, that's for sure.
We cannot wait to see it. We will be watching closely. Thank you, Guillermo.
Thank you.
Guillermo Quiros, again, the manager of the Birmingham Barons, who won their second straight Southern League title. On Thursday, they completed the suspended game from Wednesday night, and as you heard there, all the chaos that they had to endure to get the game finished off, but it was certainly well worth it. White Sox fan, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2026 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, April 2nd. That's my wife's birthday. She doesn't know this, but maybe we're going to be spending her birthday out at opening day, right? Right, Michelle? I know you can't wait. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2026. Let's take 10 seconds and pause for stations to identify themselves. Fantastic conversation right there with Guillermo Quiros, the manager of the Birmingham Barons. Wanted to do that because obviously you win a championship, you're going to get top billing on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, though, if you missed yesterday's action, it was a thrilling game for the White Sox that at one moment was fantastic. Then all of a sudden had some of us cursing, and then we were cursing in a good way at the end of the game. So we'll relive some of the highlights coming up next on White Sox Weekly right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. We just had a very fun conversation with Guillermo Quiros, the manager of the Birmingham Barons, after they won the Southern League Championship earlier this week. Hey, Sox fans, stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today. If you missed it yesterday, the White Sox had themselves a thrilling comeback win that probably should not have been a comeback. But if you missed the action, we'll get you caught up right now, starting with Miguel Vargas early in the game, top of the first to be exact, with an RBI single.
Base hit out into right for Vargas, and Meidroth will jog home. Teal to second, first hit of the night, and the White Sox lead 1-0.
Brooks Baldwin backed that up quickly with a couple of RBIs of his own.
There's a swing and a line drive base hit toward the corner and right. Baldwin's going to knock home two. Teal scores. Here comes Vargas. It's a two-run double, and it's 3-0.
And Lenin Sosa, your team leader in RBIs this season, figured he'd pick up a stake as well.
And a swing and a base hit to left. Baldwin's going to score. Sosa's got a single. It's 4-0. This is the inning the White Sox have been waiting for a while.
No doubt indeed, Len. And the Nats quickly came back with a solo home run in the bottom of the first.
1-2 pitch is hit a ton. Right field, and it is gone over the bullpen for Josh Bell. His 193rd Major League home run.
Josh Bell still hanging around in the majors, his 22nd of the season. Just seems like whenever he gets a chance to play, all he's going to do is basically hit you about 20 bombs every single season, and this year, no exception. Lenin Sosa, though, he is making 20 bombs, something in his toolkit, apparently, as this is the first season he's been able to do it, as he extended his career high and the White Sox team lead.
Swing and a fly ball, well hit, deep left field, and it is a home run. Lenin Sosa with number 22, and it's 5-1.
Kyle Teal DHing last night came through with an RBI single in the top of the fourth.
1-1, hit on the ground, and a base hit to right. Fletcher will trot home. Kyle Teal with an RBI single to make it 6-1.
And as I mentioned, Lenin Sosa, man, he just kept on tacking on RBIs.
Swing and a hard smash, fair, past a diving DeYoung. That'll get all the way into the corner and left. Vargas scores, Carroll to third, Sosa to second. He's got a double sponsored by Tito's. He's now a triple away from a cycle.
Does he have it in him? He's got probably at least two more at-bats to try for it. Have a day.
Spoiler alert, he did not have a triple in him. But, hey, three hits, three ribeyes for the man who now has 75 on the season. You'll take that, and as mentioned, 7-1 lead there. Well, Will Robertson figured he'd tack on a sack fly as well.
The 1-0. Robertson lines into right, and it is caught by Cruz. Here comes Caro as he tags from third, throw to third, and they're going to get Sosa, but the run should count. It will count. So Sosa tried to advance to third, and the Nationals get him.
You heard Len mention Cruz, Dylan, that is. I thought the White Sox were on cruise control at that point. Just figured we'd kick our feet back and up, actually, and just say, all right, well, we're gonna cruise on home to a nice win on Friday night and then be all happy on Saturday morning. Well, things got a little bit dicey from there as Luis Garcia would hit a solo home run.
Swing and a fly ball, well hit. Deep left center field. Baldwin's back, and it is into the bullpen. An opposite way home run for Garcia. That's his 14th. And it's now 8-2.
Solo shot. No worries. C.J. Abrams at the plate.
Here's a swing and a deep drive to right field. Way back in the corner, Fletcher back. He'll look up, and that one is in the bullpen for a solo home run off of the bat of C.J. Abrams.
I believe at that moment, shortly thereafter, Len said something along the lines of, well, 8-3, Sox are in good shape as long as the Nats don't go on to hit 9 solo home runs. And he was right. However, they started then to add a couple of base runners to the mix as Luis Garcia then hit his second home run of the night.
And he hits a deep drive to right. This one way back there, and it is gone. He's done it again. And he's getting the Nationals right back in this game. That is a 2-run shot. And it's 8-5.
8-5, no worries, nothing to see here, no concerns, right? Dalen Lyle then came to the plates for the Nats with a couple of runners on in an 8-5 ball game.
First pitch swing and a high fly ball out into deep right. It's trouble. It's a home run, and this game is tied. 8-8 in the eighth.
Son of a, I'll let you finish it in from there. At that point, I was lashing out. I was very upset. I was frustrated. I was blaming Len for even bringing up the notion that the White Sox could blow this lead if they gave up 9 solo home runs. I was very upset. And then things actually got worse.
Swing and a blast, deep right, and he's done it again. Luis Garcia Jr. with his third home run tonight, and the Nationals lead 9-8.
Yes, at that point, I was furious. I was swearing in the studio here at 190 North State Street. I couldn't believe the White Sox had blown an 8-1 lead. Then, in the top of the ninth, everything evened out. Kyle Teal stepped to the plate, and the Nationals committed their fourth error of the evening.
Teal hits a soft bouncer off the mound. He is the pitcher, and he dropped it. Ferrer had the ball, and I think he was going to take it unassisted, and then he just dropped it about 10 feet from first base.
Thank you very much. Sure enough, that sets the stage for Colson Montgomery, who came into this game with 19 home runs. And 19 home runs, man, that is a great rookie season. You know what's a better rookie season? Nice round number of 20.
Montgomery, deep right center, gone! Sox lead 10-9 in the ninth.
You just said it. Really hard to overcome four errors in the same game and think you're going to win. Well, right now, they're trailing after they just made their fourth error.
Home run number 20.
Jubilation. Everybody, at least back here at 190 North State Street, was very happy with the White Sox come from behind win after coughing up a 7-run lead in this one. They were up 8-1. Nats come back, but the White Sox had enough last night, and then Grant Taylor came on to close out the game for his sixth save of the season as he came on and struck out 2 in the ninth. And the White Sox went on to win this one, snapping a 5-game losing streak. So what could have been a disastrous night in the nation's capital turned out to be a fun, eventful one, and a game that I think White Sox fans will end up remembering for a very, very long time. Celebrate your special occasion in 2026 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to the best spaces and top matchups like opening day on April 2nd, plus big matchups against the Cubs, Dodgers, and Yankees. For more information, visit whitesox.com/groups or call 312-674-1000. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. We had a fun conversation with Barons manager Guillermo Quiros to start the show. We just recapped yesterday's fantastic win for the White Sox, but it's not all sunshine for the White Sox this week. It was a rough week, and part of the reason was the White Sox had to deal with one of the American League MVP frontrunners. When we come back, who exactly is going to end up winning the AL MVP? We'll talk about that right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Judge hits a fly ball out into deep right center. Taylor's back at the fence. Gone. Three-run homer, Aaron Judge. And that's a milestone homer, his 50th. Joins Babe Ruth, the only Yankees to hit 50 home runs 4 times, and the Yankees have the lead.
And everybody rising to their feet all at one time. They're looking for even more history. Back in the first inning, his first time up, Dal hit his 59th home run of the season that tied Babe Ruth for the fourth most ever in a single season in American League history. The chance of MVP. MVP, the stretch of the pitch to Cal. Swing and a drive, deep to right field. There it is, number 60. The modern day Bambino has just tied Babe Ruth's record of 60 home runs for third all time in American League history. Cal Raleigh with his second home run of the ball game. 59 and the first, number 60. Here in the bottom of the eighth inning into the lower deck in right field, the magical tour of Cal Raleigh just continues here in 2025.
What a fantastic finish, not just in the playoff races, but in the American League MVP race. You heard a couple of highlights there from earlier this week. Aaron Judge hitting his 50th home run with Len Casper on the call there, of course, as he did so against the White Sox. And then Judge has homered again, by the way, today. And in between then, he actually homered against the White Sox again. So Aaron Judge has 52 home runs right now as we speak. Cal Raleigh, the slacker, has not homered since his 60th home run. He is stuck on 60. He has two games remaining tonight and tomorrow for the Mariners. So we shall see if Cal Raleigh can break Aaron Judge's American League home run record, which Judge set at 62 back in 2022. So Aaron Judge with his 52nd today, and as I mentioned, Raleigh has 60, which has been a great debate going on so far this season. Something we have asked on our White Sox Twitter poll question, which we actually, as recently as yesterday, asked the question. And as I speak, I'm going to go ahead and pull up the results from yesterday to see how people, I guess it was actually 2 days ago after Raleigh hit his 60th home run when we did send out that poll question and asked just, you know, White Sox fans, hey, who would you vote for based on the seasons that they've had so far? Cal Raleigh was the runaway winner when we did the poll a day ago. He got 78% of your votes. Aaron Judge, 22%. But I think I don't know if there's a general consensus, but Aaron Judge has a WAR of 9.2. That's an absolutely absurd number, right? And that is a B WAR, Baseball Reference WAR number of 9.2. And I make the distinction because Cal Raleigh has a Baseball Reference WAR, a B WAR, of 7.2. So that is significant, right? That's two full wins that Aaron Judge has on Cal Raleigh. And partially due to the fact that Aaron Judge has an absurd batting average, an absurd OPS of 1140. That really is like the key driving factor to that absolutely absurd WAR number. Cal Raleigh, his OPS is excellent, but not nearly as absurd as that 1140 number. Cal Raleigh's OPS is 954. That's on base plus slugging. Now, but don't forget, Cal Raleigh is doing this primarily as a catcher, which is a far more physically demanding position. It just beats you up as the season progresses. And so for Cal Raleigh to do this primarily as a catcher, his bat is too good that even on the days that they give him off behind the plate, he will DH. But, you know, you look at that WAR number and you're like, wait a minute, that's still like, if I'm somebody who subscribes to the new age analytic movement here, how could you not vote for Aaron Judge, right? That's two wins above replacement more than Cal Raleigh. Au contraire, mon frere, though. That's where I then will direct you to Fangraphs WAR, right? The old F WAR. Fangraphs has a formula that I do believe is far more, I wouldn't say forgiving, but catchers benefit far more in the F WAR, the Fangraphs WAR. In F WAR, Cal Raleigh actually has a 9.1 WAR. So this is when we get to the old question of WAR, what is it good for, right? That's where you can understand why. Well, wait a minute here. How much better is Aaron Judge actually? Aaron Judge's F WAR number is 9.9. So there's a little bit of distinction in when you start quoting WAR, which one are you actually using, F WAR versus B WAR? And then how much credit do you give Cal Raleigh for being the orchestrator of a really good Seattle Mariners pitching staff, right? Like, he does a great job of, he's one of the best defensive catchers in baseball, along with being the far and away best offensive catcher. So where would your vote go? And for me, on the cusp of history, at the very least, even if Cal Raleigh doesn't break Aaron Judge's American League home run record at 62, even if he doesn't tie it, 60 home runs primarily as a catcher. And I guess maybe the one problem that people would point to as well, if you're old school and would say, listen, Aaron Judge has a .330 batting average. Cal Raleigh has a .248 batting average. If you're going to point to that, that's when I'll go back to and say, listen, the on-base percentage, which still Aaron Judge has a significant advantage in, where he's a .457 on-base percentage this season. Cal Raleigh at .360, that's a really, really beyond solid number for a catcher. And so don't just look at batting average and say, look, Cal Raleigh is, you know, quite a bit behind. I think that on-base at .360 is a significant number. So for me, and maybe it's just, listen, Aaron Judge has two MVPs to his name. I love the guy. He's fantastic watching. But the season that Cal Raleigh has had, I think when push comes to shove, it's so close, I would end up voting for Cal Raleigh because of the demand that his position puts on him and the fact that, like, listen, maybe it shouldn't be in the any points, but because Judge has won two, Raleigh has not, and he's had such a special season, I would give my vote to Cal Raleigh. Jim is in the West Loop. He wants to chime in on this. Jim, what's going on? You're on White Sox Weekly with Jeff Mellor. What's going on? You have a thought on who should be the AL MVP?
You know what, Jeff? First off, thanks for everything you do, man. White Sox are better off because of you.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. Kind words, man. Thank you.
I'm a baseball fan my entire life. I went to 71 White Sox game this year, and as far as I can tell you, this is the first year that if I had a vote, I would be 9.5 points for Raleigh, 9.5 points for Judge. Please don't make me make a decision. That's how close they are.
It's crazy, I mean, really, right? They've both been fantastic to watch.
Literally, I think their teams have the same record, correct?
I haven't checked, but I think you're probably – they're very close.
Within a game.
I haven't checked the exact records. I've been watching the playoff picture so closely, but hang on. I'll get it for you right now. The Mariners are 90-70, and the Yankees are 92-68.
Okay, so they're very, very close. If you took one of them out of the lineup, their team would collapse on either side.
Yes.
They would have there's just no argument that says you're right or wrong. And it's the first time in my history I can remember. There was a co-MVP, like in the late 70s. I think Willie Stargell was co-MVP once. But this is unreal. I mean, we're blessed to have seen two guys have seasons like this. And we should just be thankful and take whatever happens.
No doubt, Jim. Yeah, like, you're right. There is no wrong answer. I can't disagree with you at all on that. You are absolutely correct. I think, you know, and maybe this shouldn't be the deciding factor, but maybe it should be all about, hey, this is what happened in that season, so let's not factor in anything else. But then I would say, what's the fun of having a conversation if you're just going to go purely based on the hardcore numbers? You know, I think this is what actually sometimes lends – you know, these conversations are what actually endear baseball fans to this game, is the idea that, hey, we can have an actual discussion about whether or not we should say, yeah, is this something, you know, the catcher position versus just the historic achievement that Aaron Judge is having with the bat. I think we can be adults about this and, you know, have civil conversations. And then ultimately, though, I think I would lean and say, you know what, Cal just has never won an MVP in his career. Judge has two. Maybe it's not fair to Aaron Judge, but for me, I'd love to see the guy be able to put an MVP on his mantle. And, you know, no slight to Aaron Judge, but at the same time, like, I tend to go with this one. So thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate you listening, and thanks again for the kind words. I really do appreciate that. It has been a fantastic season for me to be able to watch and, you know, just bring Sox fans a little bit closer to the game. So it's been my pleasure. To all those out there listening, thanks so much for, you know, welcoming me to the White Sox broadcast team. It has certainly been a dream come true for me. Hey, White Sox fans, there's still time to win a one-of-a-kind experience this season. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win a 2026 suite for a game. The winner will receive a 20-person suite for a mutually agreed-upon game in 2026. Host your friends, family, in luxury, while cheering on the Sox. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. We were going to have Scott Merkin join us here at 1:30, but we're going to take a quick timeout here. We're going to reschedule him for 2 o'clock because Will Venable was running a bit behind in Washington, so we wanted Scott after the manager speaks. So he's going to join us at 2 o'clock right here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, I'll get you the starting lineup for today's game right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Something like one more piece of the puzzle to curing this horrible disease. We all want the same thing. We all want our children to live, have long, meaningful lives.
Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single game ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. I'm Jeff Miller here on White Sox Weekly, getting set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Nationals today. First pitch coming your way at 3:05 this afternoon. And of course, the season finale will take place tomorrow. For those of you listening on the flagship station here in Chicago, reminder, with Bears football on ESPN 1000, White Sox game will be heard tomorrow afternoon on WGN AM 720 here locally in Chicago for the White Sox season finale in Washington. That's a 2:05 first pitch tomorrow on WGN. Jeff Miller back here on White Sox Weekly. As I mentioned, White Sox lineup is in. Chase Meidroth, the second baseman, leads off today. Kyle Teal back in that two-hole, but he's behind the plate today, not DHing. Colson Montgomery, last night's hero, the shortstop with 20 home runs. The lefty bats third. Miguel Vargas cleans up and plays third base today. Edgar Caro will bat fifth and DH. Brooks Baldwin in left field, he'll hit sixth. Lenin Sosa, the team home run leader with 22 and your RBI leader as well with 75. He'll play first base and bat seventh. Dominic Fletcher in right field batting eighth. And then Derek Hill will be in center field and get the start, bat ninth, as the White Sox recently just claimed him off of waivers earlier this week from the Miami Marlins. Also, I should mention a quick update to the pitching probables. Tyler Gilbert, the left-hander, is going to open today, and I'd imagine Sean Burke will play the role of bulk man, as he was originally slated to start, but obviously White Sox going to go ahead and try and take advantage of those platoon splits, and they'll use Tyler Gilbert as your opener with a couple of lefties at the top of the Washington lineup, and then they'll turn things over to Sean Burke, I would imagine, in the second or at the very least third inning, if I had to guess. I'm Jeff Miller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, if you missed it, classic moment inside the booth at Yankee Stadium earlier this week. We'll share that with you coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
You ever notice that some people are picky when it comes to their beer?
Yeah, and Yingling gets it. That's why they brew a beer for everyone's taste.
You want something light and easy? They've got it. Rich and toasty? That too. Something classic? That's their bread and butter.
So whether you're on the golf course, watching the game, or grilling in the backyard, there's a Yingling for the occasion.
Check out the lineup next time you're out. You might end up bringing home more than one.
Yingling, the oldest brewery in America.
DG Yingling & Son, Pottsville, PA.
Hey, it's your friend Tom Waddle. On the field, every great team starts with a strong defense, and the same's true in business. That's why companies trust my friends at Trend Micro. They protect your network, your cloud, your data, and your people from ransomware, phishing, and today's toughest cyber threats. With AI-powered proactive security, Trend Micro stops attacks before they ever reach you. Trusted worldwide and backed by over 35 years of innovation, this is enterprise defense done right. Go to trendmicro.com today. That's trendmicro.com.
Getting together with friends and family is one of life's greatest joys. But with the rise in misleading rumors that have sparked some confusion and worry about vaccines, our treasured community immunity could be at risk. Vaccines are one of the greatest innovations in modern medicine. Vaccines prompt children's immune systems to recognize and resist a disease. By making sure your child's immune system is ready to activate, vaccines help your child stay active, healthy, and safe. And high rates of immunization stop preventable diseases from spreading through our families, schools, and communities. It's true. Together, we are all healthier when everyone is vaccinated. So let's get together and let's thrive together. Talk with your pediatrician today about keeping up or catching up on routine childhood immunization. This message is brought to you by the American Academy of Pediatrics.
All fouled.
That's not good. That actually made it in here. I don't know where that ball went.
Knocked my headset off. Nice.
Oh, boy.
I need a new computer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, well. Such is life.
Oh, baby. Fork hazard.
No use crying over a broken computer. That was Len Casper at Yankee Stadium earlier this week, as you heard the foul ball knock his headset off and also his computer slash iPad, however he classifies it. I don't know exactly what it is, but took a blow from a Giancarlo Stanton foul ball, and it put that particular iPad out of commission for the evening. Now, the good news is that because the White Sox and Len and DJ were in New York, Len was able to visit the only, according to at least what Len said, the only Apple store in the country that is open 24 hours a day. And he actually commented on how the it was actually busy, which is somewhat surprising around midnights in New York. But again, hey, there's what, 10 million, over 10 million people who live in the New York area. So that's a lot of people to go ahead and get their iPads scheduled and worked on. And Len had to abruptly visit that Apple store. Wednesday evening, right? Maybe Thursday evening when that happened. And he did get it fixed up and was back in action yesterday in Washington with a new working laptop computer. So good news there, but did get knocked out of commission ever so briefly for the final three or so innings of that game when Giancarlo Stanton, his foul ball, finally did get to the booth. We had one, I know one for sure, earlier this season in the booth at Wright Field, but that did not take any prisoners when it comes to actually hitting anybody or anything. Just a ball that came into the booth. We were able to recover that. Nobody was any worse for the wear, but that was not the case the other night in New York. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly as we are watching the Major League Baseball scoreboard so that you don't have to, but obviously the races have been really intriguing down the stretch here. Of course, keeping a close eye on everything that's going on in the American League Central, because if you haven't been locked into the race because the White Sox season hasn't gone obviously as well as everybody would have hoped, despite the fact that there's been improvement for the White Sox this year, the Guardians and Tigers have had themselves one heck of a race, and it certainly is not the way the Tigers envisioned it would close down the stretch here, because at one point, the Detroit Tigers had a 15.5 game lead, I believe on July 8th, and they actually had a 12 game lead at a one point earlier in September. And now the Guardians actually took a full game lead in the division. They have since come back and they're both tied with an 86-74 record. However, the Guardians do hold the tiebreaker between the two when it comes to head to head. So if the Guardians and Tigers finish tied, the Guardians will indeed win the division, which would be the largest deficit that a team has ever overcome to come back and win a division in baseball history. The previous high is 15 games by the Boston Braves in 1914, and the Guardians are on the verge of coming back from 15.5 games back to potentially win the American League Central. The Guardians, they are right now they play today against the Texas Rangers, so they've got two left at home against the Rangers. Meanwhile, the Tigers are in Fenway taking on the Red Sox, who themselves are in the midst of a playoff fight as well. Now, the Boston Red Sox have actually clinched their wild card. So they've clinched a wild card. They are 88-72, but the Tigers are 86-74 right now, sitting in that third spot. Again, they're tied with the same record as the Guardians. And the Astros are 85-75. Now, the Astros are on the outside looking in. So, if the Tigers don't go ahead and win a couple of games here, they could have the Astros overtake them as well, and the Tigers would potentially completely miss the playoffs. So it's a lot going on in the final couple days here, and it also means that if the Tigers don't actually clinch a spot before tomorrow, they may actually have to use and turn to Tarek Skubal, which is kind of, you know, that's obviously not what the Tigers want to do. They would much more prefer to go ahead and have Skubal available for them to start any potential first game in the playoffs, because no matter what, even if the Tigers go on to win the division and beat the Guardians, they will have to play in the first round. And it could end up being a Tigers-Guardians showdown the way seeding currently sets up. So it's just a wild race coming down here to the finish in the last couple of days. Absolutely crazy. Entering today, the Reds actually have the sixth seed in the National League. That is the one spot that's also up for grabs. And the Mets have fallen out of the playoffs. Now, that has not been clinched. Same kind of deal with the Guardians and Tigers. The Reds and Mets are both tied with an 82-78 record, but the Reds hold the tiebreaker. So Mets and Reds going down to the wire for the final NL wildcard spot. The Diamondbacks were eliminated yesterday when they lost to the Padres. So either the Reds or Mets will claim that last and final NL wildcard spot, and it will come down to the final two games today. One other piece of baseball news. The Cubs dealt a big blow as Cade Horton was placed on the injured list with a rib fracture, which basically is going to put his postseason in doubt. I'd have to imagine just based on the fact that Chris Sale was out for about 6 weeks, I can't imagine a scenario where Cade Horton would really be able to pitch, even if the Cubs have a deep postseason run. So that's some of your news from around Major League Baseball, and also the latest standings that are where they stand right now and the wild card races. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Again, Scott Merkin, who is in Washington covering the White Sox, is going to join us right around 2 o'clock and give us the latest, and also going to do a recap with Merk about what he's seen from the White Sox this year and what White Sox fans can look forward to in the future and what he's hoping to see from the White Sox this offseason. White Sox fans, lock in your 2026 ticket plan today. Get access to the best seats at the best value, the biggest matchups opening day on Thursday, April 2nd, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2026. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Yes, indeed. White Sox Weekly is Saturdays. Today is a Saturday, which means you are listening to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. White Sox 59-101 on the season. That is an 18-game improvement on the 41 wins from last season. So even though the White Sox did hit that 100-loss marker, which I know they were, well, I don't know if Will was necessarily making that a point of contention. I have to imagine it was something, a carrot that they were trying to put in front of the players, but they never publicly said that was something. In fact, I do remember playing Will Venable from a week or so ago where he talked about, like, listen, I don't know if there really is any substantial difference between losing 99 games or losing 100 or 101. The point is, and I'm paraphrasing Will Venable here, but the point is that that's not good enough for the White Sox. And even though there's been a lot of growth from the White Sox this season, just it hasn't been enough. And they know that they need to get better. And Sox fans, I'm sure, are hoping that they can continue to build on that 18-win improvement that they've put in place this year. And, you know, I'm very encouraged by what I saw from the White Sox this year. And maybe, you know, this is where it depends on how you're looking at your team, right? Like, you can look at it and say, okay, this is organizationally, it's not good to have lost 100 games for three consecutive seasons. And so you may be very frustrated with the team. And that's fair. I'm not going to diminish anyone else's feelings about how they're feeling about their favorite baseball team. That's certainly, you're certainly more than free to do that. What I will say is I've been encouraged by the team's ability to turn around from what was an epic disaster last year. They brought in Will Venable as the manager, and I've been very, very happy with what I've seen from him in his first year managing young players. We've had a lot of growth that we've seen at the major league level from Kyle Teal, who is, you know, right around that 380 on base percentage, which, you know, that's an elite level number. And at the catcher spot, yeah, he's right at 380 with a 418 slug. So that's a 798 OPS. If you like round numbers, if he's you know, he's right on the fringe of an 800 OPS with, oh, by the way, an OPS plus of 124. That means he's 24% better than league average, because league average of an OPS plus is 100. So Kyle Teal in his rookie year is 24% better than average, which is extraordinary. And, oh, by the way, it took Kyle Teal a little bit of time to kind of unlock his power at the major league level, which is not uncommon for young players. A lot of times you get up to the big leagues and you need to figure out, okay, you're just fighting off fighting off some elite stuff you're seeing for the first time. You know, you might see the occasional high-end prospect in the minors, but all of a sudden you get to the majors and you're seeing almost each and every pitcher coming, whether it's a starter or coming out of the pen, with some pretty nasty stuff that you're going to have to account for. So a lot of times it's just hold your own initially and then try. And once you feel comfortable, then you can start to finally do what you do best. I think we've seen that acclimation period from Kyle Teal, and all of a sudden, going forward next year, I expect him to kind of build on what he's been able to do in the second half. And when I talk about second halves, you can't ignore Colson Montgomery and what he's been able to do, right? He's got 20 home runs, all after the All-Star break. I shared the stat that Chris Kamka provided yesterday on our post-game show. Colson Montgomery is the first player in the history of baseball to hit 20 home runs after the All-Star break, after not having any prior to that. That is an absolutely crazy number for a kid who just entered, you know, I'm sorry, he tied Gary Sanchez. Gary Sanchez had 20 home runs in 2016 after having zero prior to that. But, you know, that's so only the second player in the history of baseball to have 20 home runs in the second half after not having any in the first half. So that's pretty extraordinary for Colson Montgomery to be able to do that. And he has. Shane Smith, who also, by the way, is going to be making his 29th and the final start of the season tomorrow. At least he's listed as the probable. Something that initially, as the White Sox entered the series, they had left that as TBA. Well, no, I don't know if the White Sox talked to Shane Smith about, hey, do you want to take the ball? Well, it should surprise nobody that I have to imagine Shane Smith said, I feel good. Let's go out there. Give me the ball one last time. I don't care if my ERA is 3.98 and on the cusp of going over 4 if I have a bad outing. Shane Smith's a competitor. I'm sure he said, give me the ball. I feel healthy. Let me take the ball one last time. And he's going to be the starter tomorrow for the White Sox in their season finale. He has been an absolute diamond in the rough that the White Sox have unearthed. He was the first pick in the Rule 5 draft from the Brewers organization, and he looks like somebody who, I'd have to imagine, health permitting, he's going to be your opening day starter for the White Sox next year. I would be surprised if he wasn't. I suppose Davis Martin, who's a vet, could, but it just feels like Shane Smith, your all-star representative, is going to be the opening day starter next year as long as health permits. And the season that he's had this year, 140 innings, he struck out 137. And again, assuming he gets the ball tomorrow, which he's probable, he will make his 29th start of the season. Had that brief ankle injury after the All-Star break that landed him on the IL for a couple of starts, but you know, 29 starts in the season and almost 150 innings, that's a full workload from a rookie in his first major league season. absolutely extraordinary. And then, oh yeah, I want to mention Mike Vassell as well. What a season from another Rule 5 pick, not by the White Sox actually, but they traded for him on the eve of the opening day. And Mike Vassell has been an absolute find for the White Sox as well. 100 innings, a sub-3 ERA, and actually a sub-2.5 ERA, as he's got a 2.43. Mike Vassell has been an absolute leader in the bullpen for the White Sox, somebody who wasn't even in spring training with this team. So it's been a really nice season in terms of development for the White Sox. And those are just some of the reasons why I've been so encouraged by the White Sox this year. Let's talk more about some of the encouraging signs we've seen. We'll do that with Scott Merkin, who covers the White Sox for MLB.com. Before we do that, let's pause 10 for ID. Jeff Meller on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, Scott Merkin will join us. He took in Will Venable's pregame press conference, and also he's out there in Washington covering the White Sox for the season finale this weekend, the last series of the season. We'll do that next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as the Sox are getting set to play the Nats in game 2 of 3 of the season finale, series finale that is, in Washington. And covering the White Sox for MLB.com in the nation's capital is Scott Merkin, who joins me now on White Sox Weekly. Scotty, have you had a chance to take any of the sights in Washington, D.C.? These 3 days here. No. Okay.
Currently I'm sitting in like a side media relations office of the Nationals. They were nice enough to let me sit in here so I didn't bother anyone else while I was talking. Tend to have a loud voice, and there's a bunch of bobbleheads and a bunch of t-shirts and a couple mugs here, but I'm going to leave everything as is. No, but I got here Friday around 1 o'clock and then just didn't have the energy to get up today and go sightseeing. So maybe afterwards tomorrow, at least see the area, even if nothing is open. I've been here as most people I think have many times before, but I mean, for the city itself, we're figuring this out, that the last time I believe I covered a road game here was 2010, when Steven Strasburg was making, I believe, his third career start, struck out 10 against the Sox. The Sox swept. Jake Peavy threw a complete game on that Saturday, and President Barack Obama sat with Jerry Reinsdorf in the, I believe, for the first game in the stands that Friday night. So quite an eventful weekend overall.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And yeah, it's definitely fun stuff. Strasburg, that whole era was must-see TV back when pitchers were allowed to actually pitch a few innings. But the game has changed dramatically since then. Nevertheless, still fun to talk about. All right, Scott, so you took in Will Venable earlier today. What was the main message or main takeaway for you regarding the White Sox, not just today, but as they wrap up the season here?
Well, you know, I had a chance we've all had a chance to do one-on-ones with him, and I talked to him for about 20 minutes Wednesday in New York, and I just think, you know, encouraged. You know, I talked to assistant GM Josh Barfield before the game today. Optimism is another word. Belief, you know, that these guys, you can see it. You're around Jeff, you know, quite a bit. You can see that these guys have really started to believe in each other. You know, I think in fairness, you had this in the last rebuild too. You know, I think you had a group that also believed that they were going to do something special during that time, and it just didn't manifest itself. But yeah, you know, I think you're seeing that now. You got to, you know, find a way. And I asked Josh about this today. You got to find a way to turn optimism and belief and good feeling and a camaraderie, which Will stressed, into victories. You know, I mean, you know, this is a night, I don't even compare it to last year, because last year was, you know, a bad year, 121 losses, that shouldn't happen. But I think just comparing this team to beginning of the year to now has grown so much and changed so much. But you can't go into next year and, you know, with another 100 loss on your dock. And I think you have to take another step forward and be competitive, whether that means you really get competitive after the All-Star break, or it means you can push your way into an AL Central that, you know, does not really have a Yankees or a Dodgers or a team like that at the top. Tigers are a good team. Guardians always find a way to be in there. The Royals have Bobby Witt and a bunch of other, you know, Vinny Pasquantino, Jack Caglione, Salvador Perez, you know, a good organization overall. The Twins are, you know, kind of going into a rebuild, they are going into a rebuild. So, but I mean, it's not like it's impossible to make that jump. So So you got to find a way to continue the improvement. But I think it was so important this year for these guys to get the experience they did and for the team to learn about these guys through that experience and see what they have and what they don't have as they move forward into this offseason.
Scott Merkin joining me. He covers the White Sox for MLB.com. All right, Scott, interesting thoughts there about the White Sox and their contention path, especially in this division. I completely agree with you. If they can kind of, you know, build on what they've done so far this year, all of a sudden, hey, it's not that crazy to say maybe 2026 would be ambitious. And I know nobody, you know, Chris Getz on down, nobody inside the White Sox organization is going to publicly say that their sure. interest isn't going to be to try and win the division, because that would be silly. Why would you limit yourself? I completely understand that. But at the same time, you know, they've built on last year by winning 18 more games at this point with a couple more chances to add to that. So right. even if they make, you know, a 20 to 25 game improvement, that's just going to put you barely in the mix. So that's a huge undertaking. Where do you think they need to make the biggest improvements on the roster that maybe they don't have coming up organizationally?
Yeah, you know, and I want to make it clear that I'm not being unrealistic about it. I'm not saying that, you know, suddenly they should snap their fingers and, you know, they're one of the powers in the American League. I get this is a process. This was, you know, what, a 4 or 5 year undertaking, right? When Chris took over, and, you know, Chris and Josh Barfield and Jin Wong and, you know, Brian Bannister and Ryan Fuller, I'm going to leave someone out if I keep naming him. I mean, really a great front office, Will Venable and his staff, you know? So I think, you know, one of the things is they've lost a lot of 1 and 2 run games this year. Now they did that again. They did that last year too. And teams do that when they're probably not quite the talent level that other teams are, overall talent level, I'm saying,
yeah.
or overall experience level, overall strength as a team. But I think bullpen, and that's something Josh mentioned, that bullpen will be a target for this team in the offseason. I don't think it'll be bullpen like, you know, adding Liam Hendricks for whatever, I don't remember his deal now, like 351 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you could see some veteran pieces in there. And then they have to figure out what they have down there. Now, I understand, you know, it's very easy to turn on a reliever quickly when they have a bad outing. But, you know, Jordan Leisure has been outstanding the last 3 weeks. He had 14, not only did he have 14 straight scoreless innings, but the hitters were 2 for 42 against him during that stretch. I mean, that's pretty insane. You know, that's more than just getting through and putting up zeros. That's kind of dominant. And then he got hit very hard last night. There's no way around it. You know, I mean, Lyle hit a game-tying homer, and then Garcia hit his third homer, and suddenly, you know, an 8-1 lead had turned into a 9-8 deficit. But I think you have something in him somewhere in the leverage area, and then the big decision to be made in the offseason is Grant Taylor. Does Grant Taylor move into the rotation next year? Do they, you know, do what they did with Garrett Crochet and say, you know, prepare yourself as a starter, we're going to look at you as a starter? Or do they really like the dominance he kind of brings and kind of the you know, the settling factor, the force, I guess, you know, not even necessarily the guy in the ninth inning, but the guy you know you have down there and can build the bullpen around. So, you know, they have to figure that out. That'll probably be, you know, meetings in the next week or two to kind of start moving in that direction. So I think that's one area you really have to focus on is the bullpen. And they do have some younger guys coming up too, you know, and they have some other guys who gained experience this year. So we'll see, you know, and a bunch of guys, probably not until after the All-Star break, but coming or in that range, coming back from Tommy John surgery, and not all of them can be starters, right? You're not going to have a 10-man rotation. So some may be able to help you in the bullpen. So a lot of options there, but I think a lot of, you know, choices, not a lot, but some choices to be made. And that's why this year was so helpful. And that, you know, you improved, you played a good brand of baseball. I mean, they've been very entertaining since the All-Star break. The record hasn't been perfect, obviously, but much better than the first half. And, you know, games you want to watch. I mean, last night's game was probably not something you'd paint on canvas, right? It wasn't aesthetically perfect, but what an entertaining game overall. I mean, they've taken advantage of other teams giving them opportunities, you know, Teal hustles to first base. Ferrer bobbles a routine grounder back to the mound. Next thing you know, Colson's hitting his 20th home run, and they're winning the game, and Grant Taylor's shutting him down in the ninth inning with the help of Derek Hill's running catch. So that's just a change I've seen in the team overall from the beginning of this year.
Scott Merkin joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Jeff Meller on ESPN 1000. Yeah, I'm with you, Scott. Listen, I rode the roller coaster of emotions in last night's game because, yeah, they jumped up. They got that 7-run cushion. And then you're losing your mind if you're rooting for the team because you're like, I can't believe you coughed up a 7-run lead.
Sure.
And then, but then to have Colson Montgomery and, as you mentioned, Kyle Teal hustling down the line and then Colson Montgomery rising to that moment, that's something that I think you can look at and say, all right, I can see why I can be excited about some of these players moving forward in the future. And I'll point to, you know, they have definitely struggled here down the stretch, and that should come as no surprise that that has coincided when Andrew Benintendi and Mike Tauchman were now added to the injured list along Robert, who's already been out for about a month. And so now you take away essentially the starting outfield from this roster, and this is where I think you see the depth tested on this roster right now. You know, listen, nobody's going to say Andrew Benintendi, Mike Tauchman, they're, you know, the linchpins of your team. But at the same time, if you take those veteran guys who can work at bats and get on base consistently out of the lineup, all of a sudden it looks like a lot less, you know, interesting in terms of lineup composition. So I think that has definitely hurt the White Sox down the stretch here as they've, you know, tried to keep up with the Yankees.
You have young guys who also are hitting, you know, innings limits and game limits and at-bat limits and just going through the rigors of a longer schedule than they're used to for the first time. But I'll bring up two quick things. One is, you know, I did see fans kind of react when they, you know, it went from 8-1 to 8-3 to 8-5 to 9-8. And I saw the same thing the other night when Caballero dumped that single into center and the Yankees came back and won. And I think that shows the passion of the White Sox fan base. And I talked to Will a little bit about that. And Will brought up to me that the Sox players had the same reaction the other night, you know, that they were not happy. They were not like, oh, well, you know, it's the last week of the season. We're not a playoff team. The Yankees are. What can you do? They wanted to win that game. They're out there to win every game. And the second part is you can't stress enough how important Colson was this year, what he did to moving forward in this rebuild. Now, you know, just because he did this year is not guaranteed, and he understands that he's got to keep going. And he is certainly not the only piece. I mean, having, you know, a good young catching tandem like Teal and Caro's outstanding, Mydroth on the infield, Smith and Burke and Davis Martin, you know, in the rotation. But Colson showing he can hit for power, showing he can handle shortstop, because I can't tell you the amount of people, not a hundred, but I mean, it's more than one who have said they thought he would eventually end up as a third baseman. And Colson, much like Tim Anderson before him, said, I'm a shortstop, and the best way to show you're a shortstop is to play like he has defensively at short this whole season since he's been up here. And, you know, I always thought he was a guy who, when he got to the majors, he would take off. He just has that kind of primetime feel to him. But the fact that he's a middle of the order presence, he has a game changing bat, you know, the rest of his offensive ability will develop as he goes, and can anchor short, even though you have a number of good shortstop prospects in the system, is a huge step forward for the organization overall.
No, it's a great point. Scott Merkin joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I'll add to that a little bit. Look, Colson Montgomery, he's 23, and you know, maybe long term, especially because this team, they've made it a priority, and I think rightfully so, Chris Getz and the entire organization, Barfield, that you've talked to earlier today, they've made it a priority to say, listen, let's go out and get shortstops, because that is the smartest thing to do. You want the elite-level athletes playing those premium positions, because guess what? You can move them off of shortstop down the road and probably not be too concerned about how they'll handle playing an easier defensive position. Smart organizationally what they've done with that philosophy. And the worst case is at 23, Colson showing us each and every day that he can handle the shortstop position defensively right now. And maybe he gets a little bit older. Maybe he slows down athletically. Maybe he moves to third base, or maybe first base, or maybe even a corner outfield spot. But the good news is the White Sox look like organizationally they're set up to handle that. And right now, while he's handling it defensively at shortstop, he does, as you mentioned, have that game-changing bat. So he's been worth 2.9 wins above replacement in less than, you know, basically a half season when you, you know, factor everything in. So he's played 69 games so far this season. So
I'll tell you, I mentioned, one scout mentioned what you just said about maybe, you know, left field for him. I mentioned that to him at one point a couple weeks ago, and he just kind of shook his head and laughed. I don't think he sees himself as a left field. I think he has played, you know, even at the big league level, he's played in quite a bit of third base and done very well over there too. So I think, you know, he could handle either one of those spots, but I think he, you know, to his credit, you know, he believes he's a shortstop, and, you know, I believe that I'm 6'3". Well, I can't prove that because I'm not, but he has the ability to say, I believe I'm a shortstop. And by the way, here's my resume. And he's certainly, you know, proven that through his resume this year on the field for the White Sox.
And what's been so encouraging, I think you're, you know, you hit on it too, that point about, listen, once he got to the big leagues, there, I think there was just, we've seen it now, anecdotally, whether what we've talked about with him in the clubhouse, there is just the huge relief off the monkeys off of his back, right? Like he didn't, he got through the minors. He's now at the majors, and it feels like he's kind of just a little more relaxed now at this level. And he's like, you know what? I do belong here. He talked about that, and I think he sees it now. And moments like last night are just, you know, proving to him that that belief is founded, you know, well-founded. He definitely has earned his way here. And now based on what he's gone through, it's been a huge success for the White Sox, and Colson and the entire organization, I think, can feel good about him moving forward next season.
I've always joked about, you know, he was a standout. I mean, a real frontline high school basketball player in Indiana high school basketball. And that's not like high school ball. That's like a way of life, right? So if you can succeed on that level, you can pretty much succeed ever, anywhere, in my opinion. So I just thought just talking to him, just getting to know him, you know, in the minors, he was coming up. I get that, you know, the minor league numbers don't, to me, they mean sort of like a chance for promotion. I don't, you know, I've always used this line that no one gets on Cooperstown stage and said, you know, man, I wouldn't be here without my 360 average in Charlotte in 2010. You know, I mean, it gets you to the next point. You got to show that. So there was reason for concern, but you know, I mean, he was hitting 149, right? When he, and you know, not making a lot of contact, and you know, I think was getting worn down by the process, and the White Sox sent him on that great reset where he worked with Ryan Fuller. And I think had as much a mental reset as everything else. And you just kind of had a feeling once he got a chance. Now, I would be lying if I said I'd written in my notebook or my notes 20 home runs by 2 days left in the season. You know, I think that stunned everyone. And, you know, whatever, 50 RBIs right around there. But, he, you know, I thought he would have this chance to be very good once he got the opportunity up here.
Merck, appreciate it as always. And as I let you go, I'm going to ask you one final question. Short answer here. In honor of the Sox playing the Nationals, who is your all-time favorite Montreal Expos player?
I'm going to go, short answer, Andre Dawson.
There you go. Well worth it. All right, Merck, I appreciate it as always. Thanks for joining us, Jeff. All season long. You're the best, Scott.
Anytime. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Scott Merck, and he covers the White Sox for MLB.com, and he has a great newsletter as well. So if you want White Sox information in the offseason, be sure to subscribe to that. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Hey, White Sox fans, are you looking for the best way to start your game day? Join us next season and treat your group to a pregame patio party. You'll get 2 hours of an all-you-can-eat buffet along with unlimited beer, wine, and Coca-Cola products. For more information, visit whitesox.com/party areas or call 312-674-1000. When we come back, we'll wrap up White Sox Weekly and get you set for the pregame show coming your way at 2:30 on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Join us. Visit bestfriends.org to adopt an out-of-this-world pet near you. Together, we will save them all.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as we get set for the White Sox pregame coverage, which will begin at 2:30. Now, looks like the originally planned 3:05 first pitch is going to be delayed, as the Washington Nationals have tweeted that we're going to begin this one in a weather delay. So there's rain, obviously, in the area in Washington, D.C. So the exact start time I do not have for you, but obviously we are monitoring the inclement weather system in the area. And so as soon as we know more, we will let you know more. But, of course, we'll start the pregame show at 2:30 and then get you more information as soon as we have it. Of course, Len and DJ are in Washington, D.C., and so they will, of course, be our eyes and ears and relay us all the information, and we will relay it to you as well. Join us next season to celebrate your special occasion with 2026 with a White Sox suite outing. Reserve your suite today to get access to the best locations and top matchups like opening day on April 2nd, plus big matchups against the Cubs, Dodgers, and Yankees. For more info, visit whitesox.com/suites or call 312-674-1000. Logan Gilbert the lefty, is the opener for today's game. Of course, he did have that little glove incident the other night against, I'm sorry, Tyler Gilbert. Thank you. I said Logan Gilbert's. He's the Mariners' elite starter. Tyler Gilbert, the lefty for the White Sox. He will be the opener tonight, this afternoon, whenever the White Sox actually play this game. He'll be the opener for the Sox, and then Sean Burke will be the bulk man after that. And then looks like Shane Smith is going to get a final start in the season finale tomorrow afternoon. Programming notes for all of you listening to us here on ESPN 1000 in Chicago. The Bears play tomorrow against the Vegas Raiders in Las Vegas. So there is a conflict. The Bears will be heard on ESPN 1000 here locally. White Sox, the final game of the 2025 season, can be heard on WGN Radio. That's AM 720 here in Chicago. So the season finale with Shane Smith on the bump for the White Sox, again, that will be on WGN tomorrow afternoon. That's a 2:05 first pitch. All games across baseball are planned for a 2:05 Central Time first pitch, as they have changed that rule because they want the competitive balance with all the games going down to the wire, you know, with the playoff races like the Guardians and Tigers. So they want all the games to be starting at the exact same time so that, the, for instance, the Tigers, if they have a win or go home situation, or, you know, they need, if it's dependent upon whether or not the Astros, for instance, win or lose their game, they want the Tigers to have to make the decision, hey, if we're in a do or die and we want to, you know, we need to know if we're going to start Tarek Skubal, well, guess what? You have to make that decision before you know any results with the Astros, who are chasing them for that final wild card spot. Or, hey, Tigers, just go ahead and win, and maybe you can avoid that wild card spot and win the division if the Guardians lose. But again, Guardians hold the tiebreaker. That's something we've been talking about quite a bit here down the stretch, as the Guardians and Tigers are both 86 and 74. Of course, we're going to keep an eye on all the scores from around Major League Baseball. Len Casper, Darren Jackson will keep you up to date, as will I, as we start this game in a rain delay. But when we have official word, I will let you know. But we're officially going to start the pregame show at 2:30. I'm Jeff Meller. Thanks for listening. Thank you as well to Aiden O'Connor and Brennan Riley for helping to produce White Sox Weekly each and every Saturday on ESPN 1000. We're going to get things going with the pregame coverage next, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.